Is there some specific topic that you're supposed to be in? Was there some specific topic, or?
Well, last time you were here, you spoke on Daishika, Brahmacharya, so nicely. That's a really wonderful topic. And it's a really unique form of institution.
So, Daishika Brahmacharya. So the question is, how is on Daishika Brahmacharya? So Naishtika Brahmacharya means someone who dedicates their life to Brahmacharya, or to celibacy and study, so that they can perfect their life in this way. The whole purpose of human life is to perfect, come to the perfectional platform, and develop love for Radhan Krishna. So now, in that process, then perfection means overcoming one's conditioned nature. Being able to purify the conditioned nature and bring it to the point where the one is beyond that. When it comes to the Dharma Buddha platform. And then at the same time is that we need to develop our love for Krishna. So these two things must be accomplished. We must give up our attractions, attachments, and then we must attach ourselves to Krishna. So then, all the four ashrams are for this purpose, to help us become free from material contamination and to become attracted and attached to Krishna. That's the purpose. So depending upon the degree of attachments that are there, depending upon the ego, then one will choose the Brahmacharya ashram or the Grihastha ashram, the Vanaprastha ashram, or the Sannyasa ashram. So the advantage to the Naistika Brahmacharya means that one does not have to deal with much ego. Right? Because conditioned nature means who we think we are, not who we actually are, who we think we are. Who we actually are is simple, we're servant of Krishna, the eternal servant of Krishna. That's who we actually are. But the problem is from being in the material world for a long time, then we've developed all these ideas of who we think we are. So then the Brahmacharya ashram then affords us the facility to learn actually who we are and how to deal with the difficulty of who we think we are. And the other aspect is, since it's who we think we are, it's false ego. So the Brahmacharya in his position then is able to... there's no necessity for the Brahmacharya to maintain false ego. Therefore, he can take the position of the menial servant. And due to that menial service, it brings one very close to the actual identity that we are servant of Krishna. And by performing menial service, then the ego, whatever is there, can be dealt with more easily because it's on a reduced platform. So then, and whatever else we do, even if it's not menial service, it's some more serious or some greater service, it is being done without any desire for material results. So it's nishkam, it's not sakam. So this position of nishkamya then affords the brahmachari the ability to very, you know, quickly and dynamically overcome the obstacles of false ego. Because as we know in Gita, I think it's in 340, then Krishna is saying, Arjuna is asked, where does this lust reside? So then Krishna is pointing out, this lust resides in the mind, the senses, the intelligence, these three places. The Prabhupada in the purport then describes that the mind comes up with some idea to enjoy, And then it does, then that enjoyment will be within the sphere of the senses. And it will use the intelligence then how to organize the senses nicely to get that enjoyment. And this will create ego. So we see is that from the it develops like this. From the mind, then the intelligence, then the ego. So therefore the lust will create a lot of ego. And it will develop the intelligence how to find sense gratification. It means the mind wants it, but the intelligence must find it. Right? Mind will sit here and think, oh, it would be very nice to do this or do that. But the intelligence has to figure out how to get to those places, get the sense gratification, and, you know, in some way be able to fulfill the desires of the mind. So to do that, then there must be an ego. You have to have an idea, yes, I can do this, or I'm this, I'm that. You see, people who are in an enjoying mood, their ego is greater. Those who are not in an enjoying mood, their ego is less. Right? Or their intelligence hasn't been able to connect them with the sense objects, so their confidence is less. Right? Someone who is very confident and sure of themselves also then has a great ego, because they're able to connect the senses to the sense objects. Does that make some sense? Right? And then you'll see the common man in the street, though he has the same desires, he does not have the intelligence how to get it. He can't do it because of karma, right? Because by karma, one person has the intelligence to get, another person doesn't. So the person who does then has the confidence, he has the ego. Yes, I'm the enjoyer, I'm the ladies' man, I'm the this, I'm the that, I'm very special, I'm unique, I dress well, I, you know, all these things. Right? And so, therefore, we look, somebody with that confidence, somebody with that ego, then we, oh, I should be like that. Right? You see the actors or the models. These persons that or musicians, whoever it is, has influence on the present day society, then it's because they have that confidence. Right? They know how to put on the clothes and look good. They know how to speak well or mean in such a way that the common person is attracted. Of course, the gentleman will think it's nonsense, but whatever. Nowadays gentlemen are far and few between. Right? Those looking for nonsense are greater. So therefore, these people are the common. Before it would be, you know, intellectuals and cultured people and, you know, statesmen and, you know, saintly persons. These persons would be, they were confident in their area. And then we see in the Bhagavatam, then it's those who are confident of Krishna's mercy. Those on the, you know, elevated platforms we see in the platforms of Bhava, Prema. They have that confidence that Krishna will take care of them, Krishna is there. So that confidence then gives the ultimate ego, that I am serving Krishna. So the brahmachari then doesn't have to play around with all this mundane ego. He may have it, but if he wants to be a successful brahmachari, he can't keep it. If he wants to be the big man, the big brahmachari, the big manager, the big leader, the big this, the big that, then he won't be a big brahmachari. He'll be a big something, but brahmachari, no. Like that. He may be wearing saffron, that's another thing, but it means brahmachari is more than saffron. Brahmachari is a mentality. Like you notice here, oh, there's so many things I mentioned here. Not one of them says he should wear saffron cloth nicely, or his cloth should be a really nice saffron color, right? But 10 points here by Maharaj, I don't think one of them mentions saffron cloth. Right? So that's nothing to do with it. So we see is that therefore the brahmachari is a menial servant. His ego is less. Ego is less means the intelligence is not endeavoring for sense gratification. Therefore the mind cannot be satisfied in sense gratification. It cannot be running around looking for more and more ways to enjoy. The mind has to start to get used to the idea to be satisfied in serving Krishna. Is this understood? That's why menial service. Otherwise, then it's not important. So the Grihastha Ashram, then the difficulty comes is because desires are there, then one has to have the ego to do that. Right? Brahmachari is not a man, is not a woman. He's a brahmachari. Right? And he doesn't want to get involved in such interactions. Therefore, he doesn't act like a man. He acts like a brahmachari. Right? So, brahmacharis are like children. Right? Like you see, young boys and young girls are not so much difference in their behavior. A little bit. You know, the feminine nature is slightly different from the masculine. But it's not much different. But when they're young. But then when they reach the teenage, then you see, then there's a distinct difference between the boys and the girls. And the older they get, the more distinct it becomes. Because then there's more and more desires, so to fulfill those desires, then there's the endeavor, and it develops more and more ego. So then, the brahmacharya is not like that. He is just, he's not man, he's not woman, but being in a male body, there's etiquette to be performed. And since he has masculine senses, he doesn't want them to become engaged in the sense objects, which is far feminine. Right? So therefore, he deals with women in a certain way. He deals properly. He doesn't behave, you know, heavy. Yeah, we're brahmacharis, yeah, stupid women. That means there's ego. And wherever there's ego, there's desire. It's that simple. If there's no ego in a certain area, because there's no desire. Right? Anything that you identify with, and yes, you know, this, that, and oh yes, I can do it because there's a desire. It's a very simple thing, and very difficult to get on top of, but very actually simple to understand it. Wherever there's a problem, it's because there's a material desire behind it. Right? So that's anartha. Yeah, so Krishna is giving. He's saying, lest us sitting in these three places. Right? And then Prabhupada mentions, from that develops the ego. So we can see is wherever something happens and it bothers our ego because there's some material desire there. Right? And we see, if it doesn't bother our ego, it's not a problem. Right? Problems come because they're in connection with what our identity is. What our false identity is. Otherwise, it's not a problem. Right? If someone comes and starts opening your locker, then it's, hey, what are you doing? If someone's opening someone else's locker, then you may not care. Right? So, because that, there's no desire there. You know? If it was, I had a desire to open the other locker and get things out of it, if someone else is walking, hey, what are you doing there? Why? Because he shouldn't be there, I shouldn't be there. Right? But if I have no desire, then therefore, then there's one is not, it's not, doesn't bother us. Right? But if it's connected to us, that our ego identifies with it, then there's a problem. So brahmacharya means no ego. One who's a naistika brahmacharya means one who is working on removing the ego in a dynamic way. It means he doesn't even give it any time. Right? A upakurvana brahmachari who will get married is working on a controlled ego. Right? He keeps it to the minimum so that he can learn the most and he knows what is the proper standard so that he can engage his material ego in Krishna's service. Right? That's the Grihastha Ashram. It's how to engage my mundane ego in Krishna's service. That's what it means. I'm a man, you know, and I'm, you know, the provider, I'm the protector, I'm so many things. He has to engage that in Krishna's service. Brahmachari doesn't bother with that. The Brahmachari, he doesn't, it's just no ego. If there's any ego there, it's not good. Right? For Grihastha, ego must be there because he has desire. Otherwise, he didn't have desire, why get married? Right? If one can avoid it, why bother? One is getting married because it's unavoidable. So therefore, those egos must be dealt with. Those egos must therefore be engaged in Krishna's service. But the brahmachari means one who doesn't have to engage those egos in Krishna's service. He therefore works on reducing that. whatever they're coming up, he reduces it himself, or someone else will reduce it for him. Right? And then he shouldn't get disturbed. If he gets disturbed, then generally one will find if it's a constant thing, he can't get on top of it, then he may be uncomfortable in the brahmacharya ashram. Right? Like that. The brahmacharya, there's no need of the ego. Because his identity, he just works on real ego, I am servant of Krishna. We're talking naistika here. Last time I think we talked more on the upakurvana. So the naistika means is that he should be able to cross that ego. Okay. Even though the ego that may develop may be septic, you know, very scholarly, very detached, very simple, you know, hardworking, all these things. Still, then there's that ego, then there's something that scholarly means, then somebody should recognize the scholarliness, otherwise what's the use of being a scholar? If I'm going to identify as a scholar, it's because I expect people will notice I'm a scholar. So there's the desire to be recognized. Right? So then from pratishtha, then should come puja. And from puja, and after that, there should be law. Right? There should be some gain. Right? Puja is one thing. Okay, everybody acknowledges that we're something special. That's nice. But more important is that there's some respect for that. Acknowledging is one thing, but that's passive. But then respecting and all that, that's active. So that's better. Action is always better than inaction. Right? And so then that's why you see the Shantaras is... Some consider there's 5 rasas, some say there's only 4, because Shantaras, for in some definitions, won't be counted really as a rasa. Because all it is just, there's no interaction. You simply appreciate Krishna's greatness, wonderfulness, sweetness. That's all. But you don't do something. If you're really serious about the appreciation, you'll do something. You'll render some service. Therefore, then, after pratishtha, then should come some puja, some active, something should happen. And there should be some profit from that. Right? Okay, one thing people say, okay, you're a great scholar, but then when they hand you some money or you get some facilities or something like that, that's better. Right? That's better. So then we can see is that it may be a subtle thing, but it's behind it is these things. I'm the big manager, so I'm the controller. I want to control. Right? So controlling means, why would you control something? Because control means the next step is to enjoy it. Right? Either I'm going to impress others and get enjoyment from that way, or I'm going to be able to control others and get my enjoyment. Right? Because it comes back to this is the problem. Being false ego means thinking I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer. Real ego means thinking I'm the servant. So all the difficulties go back to these two things. Now we've given up our mood of service to Krishna, and we are thinking we are the controller and enjoyer, because that's what Krishna is. We are the center of attention. Right? Krishna is the center of attention. And in this way, all living entities can be satisfied. So seeing this, then we are desiring that we are the center. Right? We will be the center of attention. We will control the situation. We will enjoy the situation. So then we can see, even though they're subtle, those things are there. Right? In the conditioned state. To some degree, more or less. So when we're pure devotional service, means when we give up this desire. Like that. Some conditioning still may be there, but when we give up the desire to be the controller and enjoyer, we want to serve. So that is the platform of the brahmacharya. The brahmacharya, he is served. So then from that platform, then he serves. He just engages himself in Krishna's service. And his own needs are adjusted with that. It means they must be taken care of. When we have to eat or rest or that, we do. But we adjust it according to what is good for Krishna's service. Like that. That's always the thing. Because as servant, then it must adjust around that. We must make a plan according to that. Grihastha makes his own plan. Right? Brahmachari sees what is Krishna's plan and adjusts around that. Grihastha tries to get his plan to match with Krishna's. So this is the difference. So it's a simple point that takes a little time to practice. That's the thing. Spiritual life is actually very easy if we just accept the principles and endeavor for them. But the practice may take some time because we're so used to or conditioned to behaving in such a way that is not along these lines. Any questions on this?
Maharaj, you were saying, being in a male body, certain etiquettes need to be followed. Can you go into detail of this and the different levels of relationships, different kinds of interactions with different members of the society or Brahmachari might have and proper ways to behave etiquettes?
Brahmachari, his dealings. See, is that Krishna has established what is relationship. Rasa is coming from Krishna. He is Raso Vaisaha. He is the ocean of Rasa. Baba always mentions the reservoir of Rasa. This reservoir of all pleasure. So pleasure is Rasa. Right? Pleasure means that there is interaction. Right? Pleasure does not happen when there's no interaction. Pleasure happens when there's interaction. Right? The impersonalist might say, no. The impersonal realization means that there's pleasure in inaction. But actually, it's not there. Even their pleasure is still in relationship to action. Because the pleasure is perceived in the withdrawal of the mind from the sense objects. So when one is engaged with the sense objects, there is a problem. There is passion. There's anxiety. There's pain. So when one removes from that and just situates them in goodness, then that process of removal will give some happiness. Right? But once it's removed, then there's no interaction, so there's no happiness either. Happiness only comes when you solve a problem in the material world. Right? But on the spiritual platform, means when you engage in interaction with others. Here it's on the karma platform, when the senses and the emotions are engaged with other senses and emotions, there's a happiness. Then in the spiritual world, when the spiritual form and the spiritual living entity interacts with other spiritual living entities, that creates happiness. Then, where you keep Krishna as the center, as the supreme spiritual person. And then the platform, the impersonal idea, is something in between, where you're pulling out of one, but you haven't gotten the other. So the process of withdrawal from the material, it gives them the happiness, what they call Brahmananda. But otherwise, in the Brahman, there is no happiness, because Brahman is Sat. There's no Ananda. So by definition, it cannot have happiness. They call it Brahmananda, but then Ananda is quality. But the Brahman has no qualities. So how can it have Ananda? Right? So there is no Brahmananda, by their own definition, though they don't think that far. Because if they thought that far, they'd give it up and just get into nonsense sinful activities. So better that they just sit there and be peaceful and not perform sinful activities. Right? So Ananda is only in relationship with something. Something meets something else, then there's happiness. Or your mind meets the Brahman. Or your mind withdraws from the material. But if your mind and the Brahman are the same thing, how is there going to be any perception of happiness? So it's only, they only say it's there, just to encourage people to perform, regulate their life, and try to improve their life. So happiness, this pleasure means interaction. So Krishna is the source of all pleasure. He's the source of all rasa. So that means how rasa works is given by him. And we may pervert it, so that means we put ourselves in the place of him. Right? But it doesn't mean that the process doesn't work the same way. Right? It works in the same way. It's not different. Right? Food is known to give taste. Right? Flowers give smell. So then we see here in this world, you know, food also gives taste, flowers give smell. Like this. So we have to understand or acknowledge that the whole process of rasa has come from Krishna. So the standards of rasa therefore come from Krishna. So Krishna then authorizes what is proper rasa. What is the proper interaction? If you want some of the you know, the higher end, the five main rasas, or at least the more pleasant of the seven secondary rasas. You know, if you're into ghastliness and fear like that, then no problem, do anything you like. But if you want something a little bit more refined, then there's a way to do it. So then, like chivalry, you know, if a huge, big, you know, strong adult goes to fight with a one-year-old kid, is there any chivalry? No, chivalry can't exist. Like Vanasura, that was his problem. He has 1,000 arms. Who's he going to fight with? So he gets frustrated. He cannot taste that chivalry. So therefore he goes and he takes mountains and just beats them until they go into powder. Something to do. And even then he's not satisfied because the mountain doesn't respond. Right? So when he hears that he's going to fight with Krishna and he's going to defeat him, then he's actually happy. One would think, why is he happy? No, he's happy because then there's some rasa, there's some interaction. Like that. So that means if he gets defeated, means that his full energies will have been applied. You know, there would have been nothing. If he defeats the other person, then that means there's something of his that's not used. If he is defeated, means all of his abilities, all of his arms to the best of their abilities, his intelligence, his senses, everything was fully used. So then you get full taste of the sugar. So then there's, so this aspect is there. So then, understanding this, then we should see, well then, what are Krishna's directions, how to interact as a brahmachari? Because Krishna also comes as a brahmachari. He comes as Vamrita. We see many of his great devotees are also brahmacharis. And they interact in a certain way. So what are those ways? So then we should see. One is that, you know, the basic principle, all women are seen as mother. Like that. So their mother or their potential mother. Even if they're young, they're still dealt with respectfully because they carry the potency of mother. Right? It's not that it's only if there's a big fire, it's fire, and if you have a match, who cares? You take that little match and just throw it on the side, and then you have a big fire. So no fire can be neglected. So no woman can be neglected or dealt with improperly. Because fire is fire. So even the younger girls, they're dealt with respectfully. They may be younger girls, so therefore if you're older, you may deal with them, you know, as an elder. But still, why we're dealing with them in that way is because they're being respected, because of they have the potency to become mother. Right? And many of the elements of mentality of mother, they can have when they're small. Right? You can see 3-4-year-old girl, 5-year-old girl will have a motherly mood towards her younger brothers and sisters and like that. They can pick them up, they can carry them, they can, you know, shake them, they can get them to stop crying, they can feed them, they can change, they can do all, practically everything that the grown women can. Like that. So the whole mother mentality can be there, so that has to be respected. So therefore, one does not joke with them, one does not play with them, one does not do any of these kind of things. One deals very pleasantly, properly, but it's always contains some formality. Some formality. Like that. Must always, in other words, the senses and the sense object should not connect. Like that. To grihasthas. Grihasthas are always considered superior to brahmacharis, you know, socially. Because the brahmacharis are like children in the society, the grihasthas are like the parents. So even if the brahmachari is older, the grihastha is younger, the brahmachari will respect that grihastha as someone senior. Though the grihastha may respect the brahmachari as senior also, but that's their point of view. You understand? Just like, let's say you have two heads of steak meat. Right? So, the one head of state could be thinking, I'm head of state, everybody respects me, so this other head of state, he should respect me. It could do that, but the problem is the other person is also head of state. So, therefore, the one head of state should respect the other one as head of state, and the other second should respect the first as head of state. Right? Then the relationship goes very nicely. And then they're juniors, then they respect them both as heads of state. And they serve. Right? So like that. Then we should see is that two people can still respect each other. Even though they may have different elements to be respected. Or they might even have the same elements to be respected. Two senior brahmacharis would respect each other. Like that. Point is if someone has a quality that's supposed to be respected, it's supposed to be respected. It doesn't matter if you also have. Right? You have some money, so therefore you don't have to respect anybody else with money. You just treat them all like they're beggars. No, it doesn't work. Someone else has money, they're respected. So you respect the other person. You don't worry about your own respect. That's their business. It's their business to respect, you know, from whoever they're supposed to respect. So qualities must be respected. So all grihasthas, we deal with that. Though even within that, depending upon what's the relation, there may be, you know, various things that modify. That's another thing, is that there's not just one aspect. There may be many aspects. If the brahmacharya is somehow or another, you know, seen as a spiritual guide to that grihastha, then that element is there. He may be respecting the grihastha as a grihastha, that he is senior socially, but then the grihastha is respecting the brahmacharya. Because spiritually he's seen there. So therefore then they both have something to respect each other for. Like that. So that's there. Then vanaprasthas are naturally then more respected than the respectable than the grihasthas. Just by their position. Because they have experience. The grihastha has knowledge and they're gaining experience, but the vanaprastha has more experience. They've already been through the whole thing. They can tell you how it works. So they are in a position now to teach, to train. And then sannyas then is the one who is not endeavoring to move in these fields. You know, so they're naturally also teachers. So, yeah, like that. So that's basically how you get. And then the brahmachari, see also there's different grade levels of brahmachari. The brahmachari is trained, if he's finished his basic studies, then that's to be respected more than someone who hasn't finished. That also is there, but even amongst brahmacharis. The brahmachari who's finished his studies and graduated and then is going to get married then is more respectable than the brahmachari who hasn't finished his studies. Like that also. But of the two, then the brahmachari brahmacharis who finish their studies, then naturally one who remains to be a naishtika will be respected by the one who, the brahmachari who's finished his studies, but who hasn't gotten married. then the kings should respect the Brahmins, you know, and respect the graduated Brahmacharis. Otherwise, then the other Brahmacharis who haven't graduated or haven't, you know, come to a particular platform of what you say is this is our standard of Brahmacharis, then you know, they're seen as, they're cared for. All Brahmacharis are cared for, but those who have finished that come to the point where we can see, say that they are preachers, or they're like spiritual authorities or teachers, then the administrator should respect that, the business people should respect that, and the common person should respect that. So that's basically the interaction. Any other questions?
In the enjoying mood, the ego also becomes greater. It's a mathematical principle. Can you break a little bit more depth on this?
Means in the Bhagavad Gita, in that 340, then Prabhupada explains this, that the mind is the center of all the desires, so it comes up with something that's sitting in the middle of the senses. Then it engages the senses and the intelligence that also helps in that. And so then this develops the ego. So the ego is an identity that I am this, I am an enjoyer of this, or I'm a controller of this. In some way, it creates something unique that we can identify with. You know, I have very good, you know, I can hear very well, or see very well, or smell or taste very well, or physically, you know, we're very strong, or we can do so many different things, or like that. Because you only have an ego and something you can do. Right? So that somebody maybe can stand on their head, but it's not a desire they have. They don't have an ego about it. While someone who's into, let's say, yoga or something, he can stand on his head for so long. Then he'll have an ego. Yes, I'm a yogi, I can stand on my head. Right? So it's your desires, then those translate into ego. That's the thing. So what you have desire in, you'll find there's ego in that area. And where there's no desire, you won't find ego in that area generally. So if there's a place where you find there's some ego that you weren't expecting, then you can trace it that there'll be some desire also connected there. Like that.
Desire means desire to enjoy, desire to control.
Yeah, desire means desire to enjoy and control. It means that's basically what it boils down to. It means you can't enjoy something unless you can control it. You can't control it, you can't enjoy it. Like that means it's like if you want to enjoy the chapati on your plate, but if the chapati gets up and walks off, or the brahmachari next to you steals it, you can't enjoy it because you're not in control of it. Right? So what you can control, if you can grab it and get a piece off of it and get it in your mouth and keep it in your mouth, then you can enjoy it. But if, you know, in somewhere in the process it flies off or runs away or gets stolen, then you're not going to. Right? You can't enjoy it. So control is the first step. Then you can enjoy it. And you see control, then comes the ego. Right? And the enjoyment, then, as we said, the enjoyment is the sense of sense objects of mind. But the control, then, means how to. That's the I. So you have I and mind. Right? So control is I, and attachment or enjoyment is mind. Okay, you call it mind, means it's in my control. Therefore, you can call it mind. So therefore, whoever is enjoying, they have this. The man has this ego to control. The woman has the ego to enjoy. So therefore, the man's ego more leans towards I, and the woman's ego more towards mine. Right? Therefore, the man he has the things, doesn't have the thing, that's not important. Having the thing is for status. Right? He has it, goes out to some function. He has a very beautiful wife, he has a nice car, he has it. The thing itself is important, the status is important. important. Right? But for the woman, the thing itself is important. The mind, my car, my husband, my house, my children. The attachments more on that side. But still, to enjoy it, then there must be control. Therefore, the women also have to control. They do it through a different... It's a whole different science. That makes sense. Person stopped. But the next step is therefore, you know, like that. So it's like this. You know a little bit about cooking? Okay, have you ever cooked anything?
No.
No. Okay, but you've watched the cooking. Okay, so then, okay, let's take the cutting of the subject. So now, how do you cut the subject? With a knife. So you didn't actually cut the subject. The knife cut the subject. Right? But you had the desire that the subject get cut. Right? So therefore, then Krishna arranged that you were able to use your hand in a way that you could get the subject cut. Right? Like a little child. You see, they want to do something. Can they do things? Little kid. 1 year old, 2 year old, they can pick up the knife. Will they be able to cut the subject? No. Because it has to be training and practice till the body works properly. Right? So actually, if you look at it, the soul desires to cut the subject. Then Krishna approves that according to your previous activities, that you have the ability to cut the subject and the facilities. Then Krishna giving his approval, then the modes of nature do it for you. So then they arrange that your hand works properly, the knife works properly, the counter, the subject cuts up, and all this. But you don't cut the subject. Right? Even you say the knife cuts it, but the knife just on its own can cut? You just take the cauliflower and then cut it. Right? Just the knife and the subject is enough to cut? No, there has to be a third object, right? There has to be something between the knife. And your knife has to be one side and something else has to be the other side so that you can cut. Right? You can't cut on its own. Right? You may say, well, no, we can take a knife and we can cut somebody. But that person has to be rooted to the ground. Right? They have to be controlled by gravity, and so that creates a weight, that creates a resistance. Then the knife will work. Point is if you can move the knife quicker than the resistance, then you can cut something. Right? So that means then the whole situation is there. So the counter must be there. Your piece of wood must be there. The wood has to be on the counter. The counter is supported by the floor. The floor is supported by the earth. Earth is supported by Ananta Dev. Right? Ananta is there because Krishna is expanded there. Right? So then it goes back. And he's there because of Mahavishnu. And Mahavishnu is there because of Mahashankarshan. He's there because of Sankarshan. You know, which is Balaram. And Balaram is there because of Krishna. Right? So because all of that, then you're able to push on your knife and the cauliflower gets cut in you. Is that right? So your free will is you want to do something. That's all. But how it will be done is up to the modes of nature. You can't do it just any way you like. Right? Let's say we board every day, we take a shot on the floor. Let's do something different today. We'll take a shot sitting on the ceiling. We can do it? No. Now we could get some blue tack and stick everything there and stuff like that. But, you know, that would be very... You can only do it still within the rules as Krishna has given it. You can't go different than the rules. And so it's said, by mystic city you can, but the mystic city is created by Krishna. So it's still within Krishna's rules. So the whole thing is it boils down to desire. That's our free will. And then, depending upon what is our previous activities, then we have the facilities to fulfill today's desire. Right? Because everything is dependent upon something else. Nothing stands on its own. So it's like, you yourself, you're one living entity, but you're still dependent upon all other living entities. Like you say, well, I want to just do my own thing. You know, why I should be here? I'll go out to a restaurant. But if those other people aren't running a restaurant, you have no place to go. Right? Or you're going to start your own restaurant, you know, and then eat there in your restaurant. You know. Right? Exciting. Right? No, that's not. So, you know, all of I'm getting my, you know, why I should, you know, I'll take, be independent, take my own car, right? But if people didn't manufacture the car, if somebody didn't build a road, you know, if people weren't making gasoline, all these things, then there's no independence. Independence is an illusion. It means we're always dependent upon, interdependent upon other living entities. Like that. We're always dependent. Like that. So therefore, your activities are going to be based on, you know, something else. Like if you worked and you got money, then you had the independence to spend it. Right? But the beggar in the street has the independence to decide how he's going to spend billions of dollars. No, he doesn't have it. So he doesn't have that. So independence is one's free will is based on what was one's free will before. What are the results of one's previous free will? My free will today is influenced by results or reactions of my previous free will. Right? I have money today because my previous free will, I did something pious. If I did something impious, I don't have the free will to have money. It's not there. Right? So free will is what I do with what I have due to my previous free will. That's free will. So you're still bound by your own actions. So people don't like that. They want that at every moment, just whatever my mind desires, that's what I can get. But it never works like that. It hasn't worked like that for anybody. Right? You can only do so much. Right? You can work with what you got. That's all. Isn't it? So that's the limit of free will. So therefore you see is that it comes again back to us. The reason that we're in the situation we're in is because of what we did with our free will before.
Beginning?
Beginning means?
In the beginning of all knowledge,
In the beginning, we wanted to be the controller and enjoyer, so therefore we've already started the process. Krishna is the controller and enjoyer, and then we see that and we want to be the controller and enjoyer. Right? That's the meaning of envy. Envy translates into control. Right? And why are we envious? Because Krishna is enjoying. So we become envious, so that creates the mood of control, and then from that it will create enjoyment, but not in the spiritual. It will create in the material. But if you have love for Krishna, right, then you want to serve Krishna. Right? So love for Krishna then means we'll be attracted to Krishna, we'll be and we'll serve Krishna, means he's the controller and enjoyer.
Again, our
sinful desires, they are products of three modes of material nature.
They're not products of the three modes of material nature, they're results of our previous desire. Three modes of nature is just what you deal with. Just like this building means it, just how you want to look at it. It's different ways you can look at things, right? So we can look at this stand, let's say, by its, you know, technical, what it's for, right? Okay, so then we have a stand to hold the mic, right? So you don't want to put the mic, you have to stand it up. I can't stand it. It has to be connected to the ground somehow or another, right? Because of this law of gravity. So engineeringly, then, if I want to have this long arm here, then I must have an equivalent weight on the bottom, right? And then if I move this arm more than is the weight, it will tip over. Right? But if it's less than the weight, it will stay up. Right? So I can look at it like that. Another way I can look at it is money. Right? This means money. It took money to buy it, to manufacture it. Right? If I want to maintain it, it's going to take money. Right? So I can look at everything as money. So all that we're doing is the material nature. We're looking at it from different angles, the material existence. So one of the ways is the modes of nature. Everything's the modes of nature. So anything you want to do, your free will, is also the modes of nature. Just like your free will boils down to money. You have no money, where's the free will? Right? You want to enjoy yourself, you need money. If you don't have money, you don't enjoy nothing. Right? Maybe the air, but not around here. So that'll take money to get you on the bus far enough away from here that you can enjoy the free air. Right? But even that's going to depend upon your nose. If you have a nose, you can breathe. So that still goes back to your previous activities. So you had to, you had to pay. Yeah. You had piety that you have a nose that you can breathe air. You know, and appreciate it. Right? You don't appreciate it through the mouth, you appreciate it through the nose. Right? You go out in the morning and it's a fresh, you know, crisp morning, you appreciate that with the nose. You know, wow, right? It's not with the mouth. Mouth can tell it's a little cooler, a little warmer, that's all. Nose appreciates the air. Right? Does that make sense? Right? Because mouth is space. Nose is meant for air. Right. Mouth is meant for other things, taste, sound. Right. Nose is not meant for sound. It makes sound, people get bothered. Right. Okay, so therefore, it's modes is just what you work with. Right? Business is money. Right? You may say, no, because you have things. You have cloth, and this, the cloth costs money. Though the cloth is not made out of money, right? But it is money. So in the same way as everything is made out of the modes of material nature, but it won't appear that way. It'll appear as, you know, bodies, or wood floor, or brick wall, or, you know, like that tree, like this. Understand? But it is the modes of nature. Undermine the whole thing. Right? So that's just what you're dealing with. Yeah. And we're dealing with our commodity is desire. That's what we have. So free will is desire. So you have the free will to think it. Doesn't mean that you have the free, that you'll get it. Right? Means eventually, but it will be, as we discussed before, it will be influenced by what was your previous activities. Means the reason you have the desire is because you've done it before. I do an activity, it will create a result. But also, it will create the desire to do that thing again. So if I've done the thing in a pious way, I will get a good result. So therefore, when my desire comes up again to do it, I will have the facilities to do it. But if I've done it in an impious way, then when the desire comes up again, then, right, nothing will happen. That makes sense. How long is this class going? What time is it now?
5 minutes.
5 minutes after.
5 minutes past one.
5 minutes past one. So then you're over time. So then you're over. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, Sāma Dekhā, Bhakta Vrinda ki, Sāma Dekhā,
Sāma Dekhā, Sāma Dekhā, Sāma Dekhā, Sāma Dekhā, Sāma Dekhā, Sāma Dekhā, Sāma Dekhā,